Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I was browsing Twitter earlier today and I saw a editorial cartoon in the Washington Post. It showed a mousetrap that had snapped down on a very famous book called Mouse about the Holocaust. And the clear implication there in the cartoon was that, well, someone was clamping down on free speech or our students' rights to read this classic book, this necessary book for their education. Of course, on the mousetrap was the word McKinn County, Tennessee School Board. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about parental involvement in education, censorship, and banning books. Mark Hemingway joins us. He's senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column titled Parental Input on Education is Not Book Banning. Mark, welcome.
Hey, glad to be back.
So what happened in McKinn County, Tennessee, as opposed to how it's being reported?
Well, McMinn County, Tennessee is a rural county of about 54,000 people in East Tennessee, and they had in the curriculum of the school, they had this book, Mouse, which is a graphic novel, which is a fancy way of saying it's a glorified comic book, on their curriculum. And the Mouse is about, it's sort of a fictionalized account of the Holocaust, where the mice are, you know, Jews, and there are cats that are Nazis, and it won a Pulitzer, I believe it won a Pulitzer Prize. I mean, it's a very acclaimed book on the subject of the Holocaust. However, it deals with the Holocaust, and there's a lot of, you know, graphic things in this, well, graphic novel. It deals with suicide, you know, there's some nudity in it, you know, there's some, you know, profanity and other things like that. So teaching it to younger kids is, you know, requires a little bit of a delicate sensibility, I would imagine. And, you know, the people in McMinn County, Tennessee, the school board there, said that they wanted to pull it off the curriculum just because they, you know, objected to a little bit of the content. But at the same time, you know, if you read the notes of the school board meeting, they didn't denigrate the book. They, you know, they clearly think it's a valuable book. They just wanted something they felt was a little more, you know, age appropriate or, you know, just appropriate in general for, you know, younger kids. And, you know, they even said they may even go back to teaching Mouse if they couldn't find another, you know, book on the Holocaust they felt was appropriate. So again, you know, this is, you know, that's really sort of what happened. And yet somehow, you know, a rural school board making, you know, a difficult and delicate decision about what kids are exposed to in terms of, you know, graphic violence and other things like that. This turned into a breaking news alert at the New York Times, where, you know, it wasn't just the New York Times. I mean, the story was really broken by this guy named Judd Legum, who runs a liberal activist who runs a newsletter. And they have, you know, routinely portrayed the activity of this rural school board as, quote unquote, banning books. And this is not book banning at all. I mean, you know, Mouse is widely available in McMinn County, Tennessee, and still taught in schools all over the country. This is just, you know, school board wrestling with the difficult decisions of, you know, what to teach kids and at what age. And it's really just sort of appalling to me as a, you know, someone who's been a journalist for more than two decades, someone who's written, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of words in defense of free speech on issues, you know, ranging from the right of French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo to blaspheme in the face of Islamic terrorist attacks, to cancel culture and campus speech codes and whatever else. But, you know, it's also true that I serve on the board of a Lutheran school, and I know that you should really not confuse the difficulties of making, you know, curricula decisions, you know, when you're a school administrator with free speech issues, because these are two totally separate things.
Why does the legacy media have an interest in portraying parental concern over curricula, not exclusive to what books the kids are being taught? Why do they have an interest in portraying that as some sort of an attempt on the right wing to ban these books?
I mean, I think it's basically straight culture war propaganda. I mean, one of the big strengths, I think, of left of center America has been they control all these, you know, cultural institutions. And that's been one way that they have disrupted the, you know, hold that, you know, religious institutions and, you know, more small C conservative institutions in this country have had on power in this country is by, you know, making it seem, you know, uncool or, you know, censorious to uphold things that teach traditional values and things that teach morality. And, you know, again, it's just the simple sort of power disparity. I mean, I talk about this in the column. There's a, you know, sort of pundit in DC named Richard Hanania, who, you know, had made this great observation. He said, when conservatives want to talk about liberal excesses, they talk about Yale, big tech, the New York Times, the federal bureaucracy, the Ford Foundation, medical associations, etc. When liberals want to talk about conservative excess, they talk about the McMinn County School Board. I mean, it's really just insane to me that the New York Times would consider the decision of a rural school board worthy of national news, let alone go out of their way to portray it as a really harmful decision. In fact, the New York Times write-up said, basically, you know, made this assertion that the McMinn County School Board's decision comes as anti-Semitism is rising in America, as if the McMinn County School Board is in any way responsible for this. And I'm willing to bet there's a lot more overt anti-Semitic crimes happening in New York City right now than there is in McMinn County, Tennessee. The school board, again, said they wanted to teach the kids about the Holocaust. They just wanted to find a better book than Mouse for their purposes in order to do it. I mean, it's just absolutely slanderous, to, basically, to come out and present the facts this way. And again, it just belies a total ignorance of what it means to actually be in the position of a teacher or a school administrator that actually cares, or parent, God forbid parents have input here, that actually cares about what kind of values are being transmitted to their kids and how books and other materials in the curricula play a role in that.
This issue has a pretty strong connection to the recent elections in Virginia. And if you would kind of refresh our memory on how parental involvement and removal of books, or at least removal of books from the curricula, played a part there.
So, as you might recall, one of the major issues in the Virginia gubernatorial election was that the schools in the state had been closed for, you know, basically 2 years as a result of COVID. I mean, it was one of the worst responses of any state in the country to COVID in terms of, you know, how locked down everything was in the education system in the state. And as a result, Glenn Youngkin, our new governor, was the first, you know, Republican to win a statewide election in Virginia in over a decade, partly because he campaigned hard on the rights of parents and their right to have an input into their kids' education, because during COVID, the local schools and teachers unions had basically made it known that they didn't care at all what parents thought about, you know, how they were running the schools and whether it was detrimental to their children to have them out of school for years. On top of that, there were a ton of other local controversies involving, there was a situation involving a transgender student that raped a girl in a bathroom, and the school board in Loudoun County, Virginia, apparently tried to cover that up. So there were all these issues that were happening there, but this was all sort of brought front and center because the Democrat that was running for governor of Virginia, who'd previously been governor of the state, Terry McAuliffe, went into a debate where he said that, you know, he wouldn't allow parents to come into schools and start, you know, demanding what was on the curriculum, which was, you know, just an insane thing to say if you know anything about how education is supposed to be structured in this country. I mean, it's, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, the Latin phrase is in loco parentis, in place of the parents. Parents empower the school boards and administrators to teach their kids, but that doesn't mean that parents aren't the ultimate authorities here. And so when Terry McAuliffe made this statement and was immediately being pummeled with ads about, you know, how dare he say that parents have no input in their kids' education, he tried to turn that around on Glenn Youngkin, because Glenn Youngkin had a woman in one of his ads arguing for, you know, more parental input. And this woman had apparently previously campaigned to remove Beloved, which is a novel by the Nobel Prize winning author Toni Morrison, from her son's, you know, school curriculum. And the, you know, Washington Post and all these other places dutifully wrote this up as, you know, implying that Youngkin was again in favor of banning books and censorship. Well, look, again, Toni Morrison is a Nobel Prize winning author. I don't think anyone's going to doubt that Beloved has, you know, some real literary value, but it's also a book that contains scenes of bestiality and rape and like all these other like horrible things. And I think it's an open question about whether or not high school age kids should be taught this. In fact, the mother who wanted this book removed from curriculum said that it had given her son nightmares. We can have a debate debate about whether this book is appropriate, but simply having an opinion about whether or not this should be on the curriculum is not censorship or book banning. And we should definitely not confuse these things because, look, we make decisions all the time in schools about what is appropriate according to community standards and values in terms of what kids are taught. And it's appalling to suggest that this doesn't happen in the other direction. Like, for instance, you know, it was barely a year ago when the estate of Dr. Seuss announced they were going to stop printing 6 different Dr. Seuss books because of, you know, outdated or insensitive characters along the lines of race and other things like that. And again, they stopped printing these books. You know, certain major retailers like eBay announced they wouldn't even sell these used copies of these books. That's much closer to actual book banning. But because this was in the name of, you know, protecting us from, you know, racism, everyone on the left was okay with that because it fit their community values about what their kids should be exposed to. That wasn't censorship. That was just good judgment. But when, you know, people on the right or people in more, again, small C conservative traditional communities like McMinn County, Tennessee, try and make decisions about what they think is appropriate in terms of, you know, piety and their religious values and transmitting those values to their kids in schools, that's book banning, that's censorship. And it's just, it's absolutely insane to portray it that way.
What is Banned Books Week?
Yeah. Oh, this is one of my favorites. I've written about this at length in the past, too. I didn't really touch on it as much in this column. I wrote another longer piece that if people want to go track down called In Defense of Book Banning at thefederalist.com. If people want to look that up where I talked about this in more detail. But every year, the American Library Association, I believe it's in September, has a what they call Banned Books Week. And it's supposedly to raise awareness of censorship and all these other things. And they every year they publish this list of what they aren't even banned books, but they call them, I think, frequently challenged books to show that book banning and censorship is alive and well in America. And yeah, it is true. Every once in a while, you see the odd objection to books like To Kill a Mockingbird or The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn because people have progressive notions about the N-word and other things like that. And then they don't object to various, you know, works of classic literature for one reason or another. But by and large, if you look at this, you know, frequently challenged books list that the American Library Association is always touting, it's a host of young adult fiction books, you know, young adult YA books are a whole huge publishing industry phenomenon. It's so many of these books that are frequently challenged or whatever, I mean, are just absolutely exploitative and prurient. You'd be shocked at what American publishers, if you were paying attention, are you know, marketing toward kids. You know, some of these book series like Gossip Girl, which they based the television show on, and Pretty Little Liars is another one, also another television show based on that. The books themselves are just full of, you know, sex and drug use and suicide and all these other, like, you know, really heady themes. And the idea that they're marketing these to, you know, junior high kids, again, is just purely exploitative. And it's not really an issue that if you don't want your kid reading this out of, you know, again, concern for their, you know, general well-being and sort of moral character, that you're in favor of a book banning. Look, I mean, I'm not going to go down, you know, and say that Barnes and Noble shouldn't sell these books, but I think it is entirely within your right as a parent to go to your school library. And if you see that they have Pretty Little Liars or Gossip Girl on the shelf, to complain about it because it's exploitative and it's garbage and it doesn't really have any literary value.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about parental input into education, censorship, and banning books. When we come back, there was a recent kerfuffle over the removal of To Kill a Mockingbird from a school's curriculum. We'll see how Mark responds to the arguments for doing so. Is it possible for the Apostle Paul to teach the doctrine of faith alone without using the words faith alone? Find out in my column in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Katie Price Vogel writes about her journey from the false assurance of works in Roman Catholicism to the true assurance of Jesus' accomplished work in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
What do you know about Islam or Judaism or Buddhism? Well, if you've wondered how these teachings, these religions, relate to Christianity, or in particular Lutheranism, you're in luck. The February issue of the Lutheran Witness is all about Lutheranism and the world religions. To pick up your copy, visit cph.org/witness or learn more at our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When Martin Luther preached the dedication for the Torgau Church, he asserted that nothing else happened in this house but that our dear Lord speak to us and we respond in prayer, thanksgiving, and praise.
Issues Etc. guest Dr. John Pless.
The same could be said of Concordia Theological Seminary. This is a place where our Lord speaks to us through His Word, and we respond in joyful and thankful confession. We therefore invite you to visit our campus, where the Word of Christ dwells among us richly.
Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Forming servants in Jesus Christ to teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155. Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations is our guest. Censorship and banning of books is our topic. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The Lutheran Witness magazine interprets the world from a Lutheran perspective. World religions is the theme of the February issue. Lutheran Witness is available in print and in digital formats for an annual subscription of less than $20. Learn more at lcms.org/witness or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Witness magazine. Mark, I wanted to get your take on something that kind of made the rounds on Twitter last week. I believe Jake Tapper of CNN had put up a post about Mukilteo, Washington school board there decided to remove from the ninth grade required reading list To Kill a Mockingbird. Of course, everyone who followed Jake Tapper immediately assumed that this was some sort of racist move. But in fact, if you actually look at the video that was released there, the following reason was given for the removal of this book, and I want your response to it. The use of the N-word within a text like To Kill a Mockingbird, written by a white author who lacks the cultural lens to accurately present the lived experience of racism by the marginalized, then placed into the hands of teachers who lack that same knowledge, does nothing but reinforce the concept of racism. Now, you say these things are open for debate. I completely agree with you. How would you respond?
I mean, that's absolute garbage, and I'm sick and tired of hearing these kinds of arguments. I mean, the entire point of literature, the entire point is it's an exercise to get you to open up your mind in terms of seeing perspectives that are different than your own. I mean, if you cannot understand that that is basically the conceit of what's happening, then, you know, you don't deserve to, you know, be in a position to making decisions about these sorts of things. Now, what I do think is true And I think, as you know, there's a kernel of truth to this, which is that, like, for instance, I don't think I'd have a problem with my own kids reading Maus, but it's also true that my kids go to a Lutheran school and a Catholic high school. We don't have a Lutheran high school around here, but they go to religious schools where I very much implicitly trust the worldviews and judgment of the teachers that would be handling, you know, very sort of sensitive information like this in terms of like what kind of moral framework and stuff they would put difficult and, you know, shocking things about humanity, you know, what kind of context they would put that in for my kids. I think that the problem is that a lot of public schools, people don't have that sort of like faith and confidence that the teachers are able to do that. I think in this case, I'm sort of coming at that perspective I just described, but looking at it through the wrong end of the telescope. Now, remember, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird in particular was written by a woman who grew up in the South, and it was, you know, in a lot of ways, very representative of her own personal experience with racism and what it was like in small town Alabama at the time. And should Harper Lee's perspective be invalidated that way on racism simply because she isn't Black? I mean, I think the intentions of that book are beyond noble. And the New York Times, I think, recently did a survey and found that it was the most popular novel of the last 100 years. And I think that's for good reason. I mean, I think it's a book that to say its heart is in the right place would be a grand understatement. To say that over successive generations now, it has done wonders for opening up people's minds at a tense time and intense periods in American history about the evils of racism. It's just astonishing to me to see here in 2022 that people are trying to say that it doesn't go far enough. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I would just also add that the N-word has been this controversial thing in both Huckleberry Finn and To Kill a Mockingbird for some time now. Those books have perennially been challenged, but it really has in the last decade. We've seen multiple instances of both those books all over the country being challenged by progressives who traditionally champion these books precisely because they did open up people's minds. Not precisely because, but books that they had once championed precisely because they presented progressive views on racism for their time. And it's just astonishing to me that people would not acknowledge the fundamentally good intentions and good outcomes that come from teaching very worthy, you know, pieces of literature that deal with race, like To Kill a Mockingbird and Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
There's a certain kind of hubris here in the argument that assumes that no one is able to read something like To Kill a Mockingbird without understanding that it belongs in its historical context and that the author is by no means advocating for any kind of racism or discrimination. And so better off just don't read it because people aren't smart enough to make that judgment.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's worse than that. I mean, what the actual underlying belief is, unless you yourself are of a race that can claim to have some sort of, you know, direct experience with racism, then you don't have the authority to speak on these issues. I mean, that's just absolutely toxic to discourse, and it's certainly toxic to literature. And it is definitely not what we should be teaching our kids, that they have to submit themselves to some sort of like actual racial hierarchy to fight racism, which is basically what ends up happening. You know, if, you know, somehow because you are not a person of color, you can't speak about issues related to, you know, people of color. I mean, it's just absolute nonsense, and it's a recipe for, you know, doing real harm to both children's education and society at large.
Talk about the vicious cycle here that you note in your recent piece where these things happen, the legacy media overreacts and mischaracterizes, and all it does is increase the fears of conservative parents that their voices will not or are not being heard when it comes to the education of their kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, I think it goes back to the power disparity I talk about, where, you know, you have a situation here where the conservatives worry that the New York Times is trying to indoctrinate their kids, whereas the New York Times is worried that somehow the McMinn County School Board is going to dominate discourse in this country. And it's just sort of absolutely insane. So when you see like an institution like the New York Times, you know, which basically every media institution in this country takes its, you know, cues from, and there was another huge report on quote unquote book banning in Texas schools from NBC News Today, come out, you know, with all of these really accusatory things that fundamentally misunderstand understand both what censorship is and the necessity of making difficult decisions about curriculum in this country. And all of a sudden, it looks like, you know, that these big institutions are punching down upon like small communities that are just trying to do right by their kids. Well, that seems to really justify their fears that, you know, there are large institutions in this country that are trying to indoctrinate their kids away from, you know, whatever, you know, values that they hold personally and their dear in their families and or their larger communities that, you know, exist outside of blue state, big city, you know, liberal America. And, you know, the more they do that, the more they're just going to make people harden in their convictions that they need to protect their kids from, you know, whatever is going on out in the larger world. And I don't know. I mean, that can have deleterious effects. I mean, and people can be, it's true, people can become too provincial, but you know, for right now, from what I'm seeing, I think that, you know, that you, anyone listening, this should definitely err on the side of caution and make sure that their kids are exposed to less, you know, major media and big outside cultural influences in this country than more. And the way that they deal with these book banning issues, I think, is just absolute proof that you need to be absolutely vigilant about what they're trying to teach your kids in schools and, you know, what the broader culture in terms of, you know, movies, films, whatever, are trying, what messages they're trying to send to your kids.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, Mark, are you surprised that the state of Wisconsin is reporting basically a flood of people leaving the public school system, and that over the last 2 years of COVID, homeschooling has doubled and then doubled again?
Not in the slightest. I mean, like I mentioned before, I care about these issues a lot because I'm on the board of a Lutheran school of 200 kids. And I remember when that school was just 30 kids, and that wasn't that long ago. It was like 15 years ago. And I have seen the rise of distrust in the education system in this country has been brewing for a long time now, you know, as you get, you know, progressive teachers unions and other things like really trying to accelerate these, you know, political messages in the curriculum, to say nothing of the general moral decay that is expressed in public schools. I think that the Lutherans would be well served by looking at this problem and seeing what we can do as the second largest provider of parochial education in this country to double down on offering an alternative to this situation, one that is fundamentally moral, fundamentally religious, and, you know, sticks to tried and true classical education techniques that actually serve kids.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. He's author of a recent column titled Parental Input on Education is Not Book Banning. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker on Jesus, Entrance into Jerusalem, and Dr. Todd Peppercorn of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, will join us to discuss Martin Luther, C.F.W. Walther, and depression.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.